This is the Cyber Union Podcast, episode 70. Why weren't we drunk for the show, but had hangovers instead?
Hello and welcome to Cyber Unions. I'm Walton in Glasgow, Scotland, and with me is a decidedly shaky...
Stephen in a hangover stage of Mexico City.
Sounding a bit rough there, Stephen. What happened? Celebrating the 70th anniversary, or what's up?
St. Patrick's Day is what's up.
I love you!
Vomit now.
I love you!
Vomit.
I love you!
Vomit now. Vomit.
Although it's not necessarily a big celebration here like I'm used to in like Boston, which is highly Irish. In fact, it's kind of somewhat disappointing. Celebration of being Irish in the U.S. is usually celebration of a struggle. From the potato famine and people coming over to the U.S. to try to live and that are poor. Here in Mexico City, it's the exact opposite. To be Irish here is to be rich in most cases, and it's just like it throws me on for a loop. I'm like, I don't understand. This isn't how my people are supposed to be remembered. And why are my people being thought of as rich here? My people are not rich, or my family was never rich. But nonetheless, my roommate invited me to go out to St. Patrick's Day party at her friend's place, and that started at 9. And drink, starting with beer and ending with beer, but in between whiskey and tequila, and not getting home until 3:30 in the morning. Ouch! Like okay. Seriously, the worst hangover I've ever had.
Right. Okay.
How about yourself?
I had a rough time as well because there's a thing in Glasgow called the subcrawl.
Subcrawl.
Yes. Glasgow has a delightful little underground system which has just 15 stops. It goes in a big circle. And the deal with subcrawl is that you have to get out at every single stop and have a drink at the nearest pub, no matter what pub it is, you know. And it's kind of interesting because it makes you go into all the places you would never, ever go into. And it shows you a real cross-section of the city. Like when you go south of the river, you start getting to some really, really, really rough areas. And you know, some pubs where before we walked in, we're thinking, really basically having to steel ourselves and get our courage up just to walk into the place and, you know, sort of walk in and you just feel the eyes on you and all of that. All the way right through to the other end of the circle, you start getting to the really fashionable areas and you find yourself in sort of, you know, yuppie designer bars where everyone's on cocktails, and so you know, complete cross section. It's a fun day's drinking, but it's heavy. 15 stops is heavy.
That is a lot,
but it was good. It was good.
Well, cool. I know we're on episode 70. I guess we should have been drinking here instead of beforehand. We do need to maybe 75. We should drink on or. We're going to wait till 100.
As long as that's in a few weeks' time, because I don't feel like anything for a little while.
Well, I mean, if we keep at our rate right now, 75 would be in 5 weeks from now. That's
five
good.
Weeks. Yeah, I should be recovered by then.
Me too, as well. I mean, seriously. Anyway, I don't want to go into the details of getting superly drunk. We should do that. It's been a long time since we've drank on the show, and I always feel like that's some of our best shows. Might still be our popular ones. I have to check our number counts on those. But the subcrawl sounds really good. I think it'd be nearly impossible to do here in Mexico City, though. 13 different subway lines, and I don't even know how many stops.
It'd be quite a day.
I don't think you could do it in a day. it would be maybe if you just did the intersection stops of the subways, maybe that would work. I don't know about a subcrawl here. Outside of the drinking, the one thing that I wanted to bring up was something I missed completely, and probably because I was insanely active back in the fall, thinking about getting down to Puerto Alegre. But I think I mentioned this a long time ago because it's been a long time since I released a show. But the podcast that is quite perfectly named This Is Not a Podcast, released an episode back in October after 15 months between their last release and their new release. So, and it's three guys from, I believe, Britain in some place. I don't know where all of them are, but the three of them I all remember from the days of Identica, and it was nice to actually hear their show again. So I wanted to just give a shout out to them. Glad that they're back, and hopefully they're going to produce another one soon. So if you all want a pretty entertaining show with a nice British twist, definitely I'll put a link in the show notes for it. So other than that, I'm trying to think of what I'm ready to talk about. Mark Sickle is going to have a post this week, which will be giving a little bit of story.
How's that going?
Good, good. He got new tires.
So he's really new shoes. Feels really slick.
It does, and he may have changed his political perspective of it too, because the tires are yellow with the red rims. So he's more of a Maoist than he is a Marxist, I guess.
All right, we'll see how that goes down.
Yeah, I'll share links of the photos that I took of the tires. But he'll be putting a post out later this week. I finally started to learn a little bit about JavaScript myself on doing some web design stuff.
Ooh, that sounds like fun.
It is. It is. I was trying to get a slideshow of photos to work, and there's some really good modules for Drupal, but I actually needed to install something with JavaScript to actually get it running. And I did it all on my own, which made me really happy. Like, I got some tips from people, but I wasn't actually sitting in an IRC saying, hey, how do I do this? How do I do this? Just reading the instructions and got it working on a site that I'm still developing, which I don't want to release yet until it's actually done. But needless to say, I got to learn a lot about JavaScript and CSS in that run. So how about yourself? Any other news besides the sub crawl?
No, except to complain about the fact that it's snowing again.
You lucky bastard.
It's the winter that just won't go away.
Well, I wanted. This is not fair. If global warming is going to happen like this, there should be snow in fucking Mexico City. If you're getting snow in Glasgow, that doesn't make any sense. I'm 8,000 feet up, or 2,200 meters, or whatever the hell that is. In meters. That's how far up I am. I'm pretty high up.
All right.
But we don't get snow, damn it. Jealousy here. Well, enough about our lives, I suppose. I'm probably boring and losing people now, right?
Yes, we should stop talking nonsense about drinking and weather and get on to the serious business of labor news updates.
Yes, labor news updates. Where do we want to start on labor news updates? I guess there was an interesting article in Labor Notes about student guest workers. And this was a really interesting article that we'll put a link in the show notes. But it's a lot of like laws that were in place years ago, specifically during the Cold War. Go on.
Yeah, can you explain how the whole thing works? Because I'm not sure if all countries have that kind of arrangement.
So guest worker programs, this is specific to the United States, if people aren't knowing where I'm coming from here. Basically, it's a type of visa program for people to come into the U.S. to be able to work for a brief period of time. But there are limitations on how many hours they're allowed to work and a limitation on how long they're able to stay. The initial idea of this visa was during the Cold War and to give people that are in, I guess you could say, countries that were threatened by communism I would say that sarcastically, of course. From the U.S. perspective, that's how they were thinking of it. To give students an opportunity to come to the U.S. to experience what the education is like and also to see what the work is like. And it was basically
indoctrinated in the benefits of the free market.
Yeah, exactly. But it's become, and that was the initial idea. It was utilized to expose people to what the free market system was in the U.S. and how supposedly great it was, which, you know, is complete bullshit. But now these same laws are being used to exploit those same workers. And workers that have been really organizing under the Guest Worker Alliance, which I'll put another link in the show notes for that too. Coming from this article.
So the program's still going on and students are still coming from all over the world, and they're using this as a way to fund their stay in the U.S. so they can come and study and earn a bit of money at the same time. Is that kind of the deal?
Essentially, yes. But the thing is, the companies are taking complete advantage of it, because some of them are working at like fast food restaurants like McDonald's. And some of them are working like 24 or 25 hour shifts, which is ridiculous, even from a non, like from any standard, that is just ridiculous. Let alone the fact that they're guest workers. And, you know, if this is supposed to be inspiring to come here, I don't know why the hell they're doing it that way.
Yeah, I mean, I read precisely those things in the articles about how, you know, they get promised sort of accommodation and regular work, and that sounds like a good thing. And, you know, they're staying in like basement dormitories, mm-hmm. getting bused to McDonald's to work 25-hour shifts. And, you know, these are people doing sometimes like quite specialist courses in, I don't know, engineering and software and all sorts of things like that. People certainly who have a skill set which is not best set, you know, served by mopping floors in McDonald's at 3 a.m. and mm-hmm. it just sounds like captive audience. And yeah, and when people complain, apparently the employers are saying, we'll just have you deported. So yep. Absolute captive workforce that has no rights at all and completely being exploited. And they are beginning to fight back, aren't they?
They are. They're doing a very good job of organizing and have been doing a lot. There's a number of actually things going on that were connected to them. The actions that took place in New York against the fast food restaurants, they were part of organizing that mm-hmm. effort. But they're also looking at these cross-border connections. So their website has a lot of real great information about their different campaigns and details about the visas that they're working under. And it's just, I mean, to the point where the visa system gets really ridiculous in the United States. It becomes so bureaucratic. They have specific visas for specific industries, for specific things. And it's just like, why the fuck do we have all these visa things? It's just, to me, it's just annoying, a nuisance, and just prevents any innovation. But anyway, I'll put the link in the show notes for the Guest Worker Alliance website. And there's a lot of great information on there that I just wanted to put out there. So, mm-hmm. But yeah.
Yeah, there's another labor story that I noticed that it made me think, because I think it's quite good, and it's also in Labor Notes, and it's the development of the Models Alliance in the U.S. Now, it's not a registered union yet, but the idea behind it is to create a union for models, mm-hmm. an organization that stands up for workers in the fashion industry, the ones who use their faces and bodies to sell products, and it's interesting because this was done in the UK a few years ago. There's the Actors Union Equity in 2009 started something called Equity Models Union. And I think they're the first people to organize models. And that's gone quite well. It's they've certainly got quite a lot of press coverage for dealing with their working conditions in the modeling industry and the exploitation of people. And I really think it's quite interesting strategically, because it allows us to take a holistic view of a whole sector and say, you know, let's look at the fashion industry as a whole and try to trace the entire thing all the way back to the designers and what kind of condition designers are working in, to the sweatshops in places like Bangladesh, where they're having these terrible fires, you know, and people are being killed, all the way mm-hmm. to the catwalks and the models. And is there something that we can do to campaign that links all of this together and makes it one industry that has where everything's kind of networked together and everything has a link to everything else, and use that as a way to essentially try to make it a much more sustainable industry? Because there are a lot of things about fashion which are terrible. You know, there's the appalling exploitation of workers in the sweatshops, which is it is some of the worst working conditions in the world. Mm-hmm. I think we've said on the show before how Bangladesh won the race to the bottom, and now you've got people locked overnight in these factories, can't get out, fire start, people die, really, really awful. Mm-hmm. You've got models who have supposedly a glamorous job, but actually are sometimes under a hell of a lot of pressure. You also have the effect of the model industry on women in particular, but men as well, in terms of sort of body ideal and consciousness, this whole like size zero, you have to look super skinny type of thing, which that industry portrays. And also the fashion industry is really bad for the environment. I mean, the way cotton in particular is produced is not very sustainable. So there's all sorts of problems with the industry, and we need to take a really holistic view at improving it. Mm-hmm. And the one you know, there are a few people around the world trying to do things, and there are a number of sort of anti-sweatshop campaigns that work on it. But the one case that I think is worth watching and worth publicizing and worth trying to emulate is the South African Clothing and Textile Workers Union, SACTWU. They have this thing called the Spring Queen Fashion Festival, and the way that works is it's been going for a while, certainly, a couple of decades at least, and Cape Town in particular, but also other parts of South Africa, have a big textile industry. And years and years ago, they started having, as an annual celebration, a fashion show in the union-organized factories. It was organized through the union, and what would happen is that in every factory, some of the workers would get together, design clothes, make clothes, and then model the clothes themselves. And they'd have a competition, and the top designs from each factory would go through to the sort of regional, and then the final night where the best clothes and the best models all get judged in a massive competition. And it's grown in popularity over the years, so that it's now attracted the attention of the fashion industry, who see this as a great way of developing new upcoming streetwise fashion, all that kind of thing, as well as Cape Town City Council. So now what's happening is that you're getting some young designers working with the union factory workers to design really interesting clothes. The clothes are still being modeled by factory workers. And it's now held every year in Cape Town's Convention Center, which is a really, really big venue. It's very, very high profile. And as far as I know, it's one of the world's biggest fashion shows in terms of numbers of people who attend. And I think it's great. It's a wonderful expression of working class culture, working class celebration of creativity. Mm-hmm. And its attempt is to make that industry more sustainable, to say, you know, this is all union made clothes. And it's great. Let's celebrate it. This is stuff designed by working people, and it's great. And that is one of the things about South Africa that is quite cool, is the unionized textile industry. And it's one of the few places where if you buy a pair of, say, Levi's jeans, it's union made. Or a number of other labels which are premium brands around the world, but their clothes are made in sweatshops in Bangladesh and Pakistan. In many instances, the clothes which you buy in South Africa are actually made in union factories there. So I think it's a really great model, and I think this whole, you know, this union made with pride thing, we should really be pushing hard on that and try to do something that ties in the whole industry and the whole sector and makes it something a lot more sustainable.
Yeah, no, that sounds great. I mean, it's really inspirational to hear what's going on in South Africa. I mean, I remember, I still think back to the days when I was learning about labor laws and still looking at South Africa as the model that the world should be going after when it came to the laws. Whether they're instituted, that's a whole other situation.
Yeah.
But although Mexico's labor laws technically on paper look phenomenal. It seemed that South Africa was one of the places where they were practicing a lot more about what was written on paper. But at the same time, there's, like, just this is an example of what you're talking about. It's just great to hear of the combinations between textile and fashion industries and pulling together, which is the connections that are hard to make. I mean, it'd be great. Mm. It'd be great even from a tech sector if we could do the same thing with, like, the programmers to the production of the computers, and understanding that those connections there and trying to figure out, because that's the biggest thing. Like, you can buy union made clothing. But if you think about it in the tech sector, it's hard to say, can you buy a union-made piece of software or hardware, and let alone software? It's not as tangibly an ability, because the movements haven't been there, and that's something that we should be trying to push at the same time. Mm-hmm. But sorry.
Yeah, I think it's really innovative the way that South African Union developed that, and I think the lesson from that is, we should, if we were all thinking that strategically, we'd be in a better place. And I think the problem often with not just trade unions, but also all sorts of campaigning groups and social movements, is this often a narrow focus, where we focus just on our own immediate area of interest and don't see the overlaps with everything else. And if we can make these kinds of alliances and be holistic in the way we organize, there's more strategic potential, I think.
Yeah, definitely. It's really cool. So, well, I think that covers our labor section, unless you had more to add.
Nope.
No, lots of links in the show notes on that section too, so hopefully people will click through them. So let's jump into tech.
Which for you is computers.
Let's jump into tech indeed, yes.
So there's actually a lot to kind of go over this week, just because of a number of things that have been going on. I'm going to start with kind of continuing where what happened last week, which was participating in the Venture Communism group that we linked to. They are now, after a successful IRC chat or group meeting, apparently that I unfortunately missed because of my lack of internet. But they are now doing a weekly conference call, and I'll put a link in the show notes for it. And it's really interesting discussions, and a lot of it's going to get political at the same time as it's going to get to practical things of what to do. But mm-hmm. it's the discussion seems to be growing, and it seems to be pretty cool what they're working on. And I just wanted to give a shout out to that. So, but I'll put a link in the show notes for the information on doing it. Right now, they're running it on Mumble, which we unfortunately have had a little trouble with today. But hopefully, it won't be a problem for others. But so anyway, that's one thing. The other thing is something that we kind of didn't cover when it came out. But LibreOffice 4.0 came out back in February, I believe it was the original release date. Mm-hmm. And H Online did a really good article of highlighting the new features of 4.0, and the reason I'm bringing it in is because it has some really amazing capabilities that I think a lot of people have been waiting for. One is it now has collaborative capabilities, so you can do collaborative work with people. And it's mostly functional within the Libre Calc or spreadsheet software, where mm-hmm. you can have real-time collaboration. The writer, impress, and design, I think it is, have collaborative work, but only the file can only be opened by one person at a time mm-hmm. when you check it out. But they have it working with enterprise level sharing servers. But it's all free software stuff. But basically, the point is that if you're in a corporation and already have like SharePoint, which I think is the Microsoft version of doing collaborative work, you can institute this new functionality with LibreOffice 4.0. The other cool things that happened with it is along the lines of design. I don't know if you've ever used personas on Firefox, where you can give your Firefox a specific look. LibreOffice picked up that same code and put it into there, so you can actually make your LibreOffice look like your browser or make it look like something else.
Okay, so just another way to distract yourself from the article you're meant to be writing.
Exactly, but the cool thing is a lot of the demos have been about doing the collaborative work over XMPP when you're communicating with people, and I'm not sure, I haven't utilized all these features, and I don't have the server set up for doing the sharing, but I'm just psyched that it's come out. But more importantly, it's now more compatible with Word. That I remember using LibreOffice back when I was in grad school, and the difference when I'd open up in Word was very drastic. You could tell there are format problems, and that has been apparently eliminated. I can't compare it because I don't have Word anymore, but the release has been saying that it's much more comparable that way, and when you're doing comments, that will now transfer over in Word documents when it's opened up in Word. Some really cool stuff. A lot of links that I'll put in the show notes, even the demo of the collaborative work that's in there.
Something else that I was wondering about. I wondered if you had a view on this. As you know, Google Reader, they're shutting down their RSS reader and the internet is angry.
Really?
What do you recommend as a feed reader for people looking for a replacement? Yes.
Oh, wow.
Sorry, did you miss that bit?
And I thought I heard about it as like an early April Fool's joke, but that may have just been the feeds that I was reading on it. But the feed readers, I mean, I don't necessarily, because I have my Firefox linked, so I have the same bookmarks that are on my computer here as they are on my netbook. And what I actually use most of the time is actually the built-in stuff for Firefox itself, the live feed readers that it has built in. But the other one actually that I actually still think is good is using Thunderbird. It has a really good feed reader. Web-based ones, I've stepped away from them, to be honest, so I don't have a real good recommendation. I don't know if you have one yourself.
I used a number of different things, and I've used Google Reader for the past few years just because I got sucked into the ecosystem, as one does. And I guess now I have to
Take a look. I know there was tiny there was tiny RSS, but I haven't used that before. I'll put a link in the show notes for it. But honestly, like most of the feed reading that I do is now really just integrated into the browser itself instead of going to a web page. I've sort of started to step away from being cloud based, so to speak, in the sense that like everything used to be done entirely on a web browser, but now I don't see myself doing that as much for some reason.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is odd. So, but okay, speaking of
just wanted a view because, yeah.
Go on.
No, I just wanted a view from you because that's one of the things that the internet is outraged by this past week.
Apparently, I did not know that. I'll have to read
up on
the outrage.
You're clearly not outraged. That's fine. Yeah.
No, I stopped using Google Reader a long time ago. When I started to think about that, I didn't want Google following me anymore. speaking of Google,
but you see, there's another good reason. You know. There's another good reason to not always go with what's most convenient, you know, but to actually do a bit of work and find a project which has a bit of integrity behind it.
Yeah, no, that's certainly true. That's certainly true. I know there are a number of other Google like RSS readers out there. I remember Google Reader was kind of cool when I was using it for a long time, but now that they've just I don't know. I'm not happy with their privacy changes that they did and that they just are tracking way too much information. To the point where I have a really cool little add-on on my computer called Ghostery. I'm not sure if you've ever used it, but it really is good at list. It, basically, at first time you use it, every time you visit a page, it'll show what is tracking on that page right off the bat. And if you go to like the pages like the New York Times or whatever, you'll see like a huge list of things that are being tracking of every single thing that you're doing is being tracked by these different services. But Ghostery gives you the ability to block all of those. So it'll show them knocked off if you have them blocked. So you can prevent like Facebook and Google and all the rest of them from tracking you. And what your activities are. But anyway, that's a little side note. Didn't mean to go there. but I did want to talk about one other thing with Google, which is the Free Software Foundation put out a statement. I'm not sure how many people are aware of this, but Google Chat or Google Talk, very similar to Facebook Chat, are all based on what is called XMPP, a free software protocol for doing instant messaging and chatting. And Google has been by far the biggest user of it. In fact, so big that that's why I think Facebook started using it is because Google already had done such a great job with it and had developed a lot of it. And since it's free software, that there was a lot of other examples of it. And I've been using Jabber.org, which is also an XMPP-based one. And May 1st and with me and a couple colleagues have been putting together an XMPP client or service of for May 1st as well. And what I found, what this article that the Free Software Foundation puts out is that Google is now blocking the ability to add people that are on other XMPP services. So Google has in the past let you, if I'm using my Jabber account, I could add your account from Google and we can chat that way. And you would get a notification saying, hey, I'm asking if I can be authenticated as a friend that can be chatted with. And you'd say yes or no. Well, Google blocked that. In fact, now what any of the other XMPP services have to do, they need to literally contact Google to have their server put onto a whitelist so that that will get through. And it's kind of a major backstep of what Google has been doing in the past. They claim it's to control spam. But this isn't the same thing because you can still say no to people and it's not like getting some unwarranted messages. That can't happen with it without authentication. The Free Software Foundation also has their own XMPP server that they promote to their membership as well. And so they put out a call to Google to change their policy on this because if you use your Google account, you can add me from Jabber and I'll get the notification. But if I try to add you, it doesn't give you a notification. And this explains a lot because I've been trying to change over to my May 1st account. People that are on Google and they're not getting any of these requests from me. And I'm like, why the hell is this happening? And this is Google really kind of
being evil.
Being evil, exactly. And it's not cool at all, in my opinion. Anyway, I'll put a link in the show notes to the Free Software Foundation posting on that. But we'll see, hopefully, if Google will change their policy on it. I think it'd be good because I think that was one of the things that was really inspirational for XMPP was their ability to expand the communication threshold of things. So I'm going to wrap up tech because we're going pretty far today.
we mustn't bore the people.
Yes. Well, if, as you know, we have Mayfirst has a Friendica installed service, which is friends.mayfirst.org. And any people are welcome to join it. It's very similar to Identica, and Friendica being the service behind it. But the Friendica community is developing a new piece of software called Red, which I kind of like because red in Spanish means network, but it's also a great color in my opinion, being a Marxist and all. And they have put out a preview release of it, which I'll put a link in the show notes to. But it's really cool because it's changing the way we're thinking about social networks. Part of the idea behind it that I can speak of is when we're on Twitter or on Facebook and Google Plus and Identica, we usually create a profile of what we are, and we have our different groups that we're a part of. But what Red is doing is instead of it being groups and being individual identities, it's creating channels. So I can create a channel for myself that's about labor, and I can also create a channel that's about tech, and I can create a channel about whatever other crap I'm going to do. And Red allows the other accounts to follow a specific channel instead of following the whole channel. So you'd only get my posts that are about labor if you're following my labor channel. But it's really kind of intuitive, and Red is basically trying to get ahead of the curve on where social networking is going. And I'll put a link into their release information and the idea behind the Red software. But it's certainly something that we'll be testing on May 1st servers in the future once it gets to beta stage, I believe. We'll be hopefully transitioning or trying that service out. So kind of excited about it because it is a really cool idea, and I think it's something that can really keep the social networks more federated, so to speak, instead of us all relying on one. So, yeah.
Great. Oof,
lots of tech. I guess we should get to feedback.
Yes. Has there been any feedback?
Help will come whenever it's needed. Cheer, my comrades, cheer.
Well, a couple of things that I wanted to say. One is welcoming a number of new listeners and welcoming some old ones. When I started getting involved with the Venture Communism Group, I found out that a number of the people in the IRC had already been listeners of our podcast, and I wanted to really give a shout-out of thank you for that. And we've gained some new listeners from that same IRC chat, and hopefully we'll encourage some of our current listeners to actually go there and participate if they so choose. But I'll put a link in the show notes for that. It's just kind of really cool. I had a long discussion with one of the users in the IRC named DJR013 about a number of our different podcasts, and he had just been a long listener for he couldn't even remember exactly when he started, but he's gone back to listen through most of our past shows, which is really cool. So the other is last week we talked about on the Fair Trade episode that we did, we were talking about trying to create a label, and a label that was talking about union made and things like that. And MJ Ray on Friends shared the Software Co-op's label, and I'll put a link in the show notes for it, which is a pretty cool idea. I actually like the design of it, basically saying that this is a co-op made product or co-op made or made by co-op hands, which I like. And it's something to think about when we're thinking about these other labels that we want to try to create with union made and things like that. I think that's a really cool idea. I just want to thank MJ Ray for sharing that. So we'll put a link in the show notes about the post and also the image. So other than that,
anything else?
I have nothing. You have nothing?
I have nothing.
Well, I'm glad that we were able to get through this despite the hangovers.
I think as soon as you warmed up.
Thank you all if you're still listening. Yeah, it ended up pretty decent, surprisingly, and I think I'm more awake now. I might actually be able to tackle the day at 3 p.m. well, Walton, it's always a pleasure.
It has been, and thanks again.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll see if we can continue our trend of a weekly episode. Woo-hoo.
Yeah, I'm quite impressed with us. Rain or shine, hangover or not.
Fair enough. All right, all. We'll talk to you all next week, hopefully.
visit us at cyberunions.org. Follow us on Twitter and Identica at cyberunions or on Reddit /r/cyberunions. You can also email us feedback or grievance at cyberunions.org. Thank you for listening.